Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And, Jim, you've mentioned it in your morning jolt in the past couple of weeks over the lack of good recent polling on some of the key Senate races. And lo and behold, we've got some updated polling on key Senate races from both NBC and CBS News. CBS, it looks like, polled virtually every Senate race out there. But when it comes to the competitive races, the three that we thought Republicans had in the bag, they pretty much do. They're also looking good in some other states. Tom Cotton leading Mark Pryor. Begich in Alaska is under 40% and down 6 points. Tom Tillis up within the margin of error over Kay Hagan. Even Terry Lynn Land in Michigan up by a point over Gary Peters. And there's still some ones where Republicans have some work to do, like Colorado and New Hampshire. But overall, if you're 2 months out from Election Day and this is the polling spit you get, conservatives should be pretty happy.
Not a ton of surprises in this, but I had been griping that there had not been a lot of good, fresh polling in the months of July and August. And so finally, we have a bunch. I think one of the things you said that's accurate is that Arkansas is looking better and better. Colorado, surprisingly, I really thought Cory Gardner was a top-tier candidate, but there's now two polls that kind of have him just not nearly as close as you want to be. One has him down 3, the other has him down 6. Not insurmountable, but, you know, not quite where you'd like to be. North Carolina continues to look close. You know, if you're an incumbent and you're down in those, you know, high 30s, low 40s, up to mid 40s level, that's a bigger problem. And that's kind of one of the reasons why the Mark Pryors of the world, even though he's only trailing by a few points, it's a worse spot for him because people already know what they think of him. You know, Tom Cotton is the new guy. In North Carolina, Tom Tillis is the new guy. It's a good year to be named Tom if you're a Republican. And it might be a very tough year if you're a Democrat named Mark, although Mark Udall and Mark Warner are still feeling pretty good about themselves. Nothing tremendously earth-shattering. You may see Democrats start cutting bait and giving up on Mark Pryor a bit. Kind of interesting, just kind of a last kind of late-breaking story kind of to add to the discussion here. Hollywood Democrats are going to hold fundraisers for Alison Lundergan Grimes, their challenger in Kentucky, up against Mitch McConnell, and Michelle Nunn, where they're trying to pick up a GOP seat. In both of those states, the polling looks pretty good for Republicans. It's kind of, you know, those are red states. They are generally in, you know, lean Republican in national elections. McConnell's got a very sharp elbowed, experienced team there, although with one less campaign manager than he used to have. and so these, you know, I found it interesting that Hollywood was going to dump money into those races instead of, say, Kay Hagan or Mary Landrieu or something like that. Struck me as kind of an interesting choice there. I don't know whether that means they're giving up on those states or whether they just have just really bad advisors out there. Other nice little ones, you know, it's nice to see Terry Lynn Land ahead by, a, you know, 1 point. You really can't put that into the bag. A little surprising that there was not a Joni Ernst had been leading a bunch and they had Braley ahead by 2. Not a huge, you know. Again, a lot of these races are going to turn out to be close. And so if you're a Republican in any one of these states, pull out all the stops, leave it all on the field, and we'll see how things turn out on election night.
Yeah, sounds good. And you mentioned Louisiana. Mary Landrieu in the jungle primary, only at 36. She needs to get to 50+1 to avoid the runoff because things wouldn't look good if it gets to a runoff. And if she's only at 36, that's a very good chance for Republicans there. All right, on to the bad martini now. And given all the other things going on in the world, this probably hasn't gotten as much attention as it should. But in just over a week, there's going to be a referendum in Scotland about independence from the United Kingdom. And Jim, obviously, this plays into plenty of domestic British politics. But it also comes at a time when David Cameron is ramping up the argument to confront ISIS, and they're our number one ally in the world, and the last thing we need is for them to be distracted at a moment of crisis. And so you've got the Queen actually getting involved in a political issue here, and the country potentially headed to some pretty significant turmoil if this goes through.
Yeah, I remember reading about this actually a couple months ago, and you know, it was an op-ed of I think some foreign policy wonk saying that if Scotland goes independent, this is a major problem for the United States in the sense that one of our most steadfast ally, the United Kingdom, suddenly is a slightly less United Kingdom. One big chunk of it breaks off. There's kind of a fascinating issue in that Scotland has said that it wants to be a nuclear-free independent country, meaning the nuclear subs would have to leave the naval bases, and they'd basically have to do that. Big question of what happens in terms of the troops. Do the Scottish troops separate from the established UK military, you know, lots of little logistical and national security questions that come out of that for the Brits. Also kind of this sense of you know, having too much trouble at home for them to really be a strong player on the world stage. And I remember thinking at the time, ah, come on, they're not going to do this. You know, this is the United Kingdom. They've been together for, you know, centuries. Well, apparently not, as the polling now has 51% of Scots favoring independence. Obviously, there's a few more weeks, like about a week or two, they can still shift back. But I think it would be kind of one more indicator of problems on the global stage if the U.S. had its ally suddenly kind of, you know, dealing with its own internal dissension and dissent to really be a major player. And, you know, at a time when we've got ISIS and Putin and all kinds of other crises going on around the world. I've been to Scotland. I've been to the UK. It's easy for me as an outsider to say, hey, you guys should stick together. We can make this marriage work. But it kind of intriguing. I think there'll be a lot of headaches that come out of this for something that seems – independence always seems nice in the abstract, and then later on you find out it's a lot tougher than it looks.
Jim, on to the third martini now. And as most people know who follow politics, Chuck Todd is the new host of Meet the Press, and he landed the president as his first guest. Pretty good get. And he talked about a number of things, one of which was the president's basic admission, what he planned to do right around now, which was take executive action on immigration reform, is now going to wait until after the midterm elections. And Chuck Todd essentially called him on that. Here's part one of the exchange.
What do you tell the person that's going to get deported before the election that this decision was essentially made in your hopes of saving a Democratic Senate?
Well, that's not the reason.
That's not the reason, except...
The truth of the matter is that the politics did shift midsummer because of that problem. I want to spend some time, even as we're getting all our ducks in a row for the executive action, I also want to make sure that the public understands why we're doing this, why it's the right thing for the American people, why it's the right thing for the American economy.
Jim, the fact that we're less than 2 months from Election Day, not a factor at all.
Let me be clear. The decision was not about politics. It was because the politics had shifted. And that seems like a shifty answer, you could say, for those who are thinking I have a speech impediment, and I meant to use another word. I mean, for us to think that this, you know, executive order, unilateral amnesty is a bad idea, I suppose it's good news. It also kind of means it's pretty clear that it's going to come after the election. I think the transparency, like, if it's a bad idea before the election... Why is it a better one afterwards? And the answer is because it's very unpopular and the president wants to take the hit afterward. You know, but if it's really unpopular, Mr. President, maybe we should look at this and say, do we really need this? What do we get out of this? And his answer would be, Jim, we get a lot more Democrat voters. And that's what it's about. So so there you go. Overall, I thought Chuck Todd did a pretty solid, impressive job as the new host of Meet the Press. I think his questions to Obama were pretty pointed, and I thought that was a pretty good example of it. One of the reasons Obama is a frustrating interviewer is that he will say things that are pretty either transparently bald-faced lies or terribly unimpressively evasive spin, but he kind of nods solemnly as if it's a really good, genuine answer and kind of, you know, Chuck, oh, you know, Chuck, you're being kind of silly here, you know. Obama will insist that that liquid you feel on your leg is rain and not something else. And there are probably a lot of folks in our world who are grinding their teeth and saying, oh, God, what a, you know. I don't think those were softball questions. I think just no matter how hard you throw at Obama, he gives the softball answer.
Yeah. There's another quick clip here that we have time for I want to throw in. And here's what he had to say about the border security issue right now and the crisis, both in terms of what our border security is accomplishing and, of course, the recent influx of people.
A lot of Americans started thinking, we've got this immigration crisis on our hands. Now, the fact of the matter is that the number of people apprehended crossing our borders has plummeted over the course of the decade. It's far lower than it was 10 years ago. And in terms of these unaccompanied children, we've actually systematically worked through the problem so that the surge in June dropped in July, dropped further in August. It's now below what it was last year.
Jim, kind of confusing there. First of all, apprehended doesn't mean the same thing as cross the border. And secondly, what's happened to these kids? Because a lot of them haven't gone home.
I hear that answer and I start thinking, huh, well, maybe those three Central American countries started running out of children. what was interesting about this, the children's crusade, what they came across our border in the early part of the summer. Yes, it's nice that, you know, the it's slowed down, but it's not ended, by the way. The most recent numbers from DHS, it's not that it stopped, it just slowed down. And I think that the first surge got through there, is that it indicated that most of these kids are just poor little moppets. Some of them are, you know, what we're calling kids are actually considerably more than kids and are actually teenagers and older than that. They have scabies. Thankfully, none of them have Ebola so far that we know of, or some other, you know, horrific diseases, chicken pox, your basic diseases, not any exotic communicable diseases. But if these guys can get through, why can't ISIS? You know, if these that basically, like, Americans in principle don't like the idea of an unsecure border, and that once the border is secure, then we can talk about what to deal with the people here. But until you deal with the border issue, we can't have the discussion of, okay, how do we handle the person who's here illegally? Maybe they're a good person. Maybe they, you know, just are trying to live the American dream. Or maybe they're just trying to make money to go back to their family in Central America or in Mexico. But President Obama doesn't want to have that discussion because he just wants to get the Democratic voters as quickly as possible. And he's very frustrated by this. But you know what, Mr. President? When you announce the DREAM Act and you say, hey, we're not deporting kids anymore, lo and behold, lots more kids start coming across the border. He's like deliberately oblivious to the consequences of his own actions.
Points for gumption, though. He's still basically saying the problem's solved, just like when he gave that alligators in the moat speech in El Paso a couple of years ago, saying that the Border Patrol's done the job, and now he's essentially, even after everything we saw this summer, saying nothing to see here.
The problem is solved. We have deterred that. The economy issue, the Benghazi was a bump in the road. It's never as bad as it seems. President Obama always assures us.
Great start to the week, Jim. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.